If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
The history of television is a history of failure.
For every television series that lasted years and years, there were dozens that lasted only one season or less.
But did they deserve to die? Or were they canceled too soon?
Everybody, and welcome back to Cancel. Wait, hang on.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Cancel. I'm not good at a horse voice.
This is Cancel Too Soon. This is the podcast where we review TV shows that lasted only one season or less. My name is William Bibbiani. I can't do a Mr. Ed impersonation to save my life, and everybody calls me Bibbs.
Oh, Wilbur. My name is Winnie Seibold. I too am a film critic. I contribute to Slash Film. And we're here to talk about some horses.
Yes, help you cultivate horse sense and a keen mind.
Yeah, we knew that horses were grievously underrepresented came to the TV shows that we watched.
We did Briscoe County Jr., to be fair.
That's true. We did do Briscoe County Jr.
We did Legend, a.k.a. the other Briscoe County Jr., which was a surprisingly good show, by the way.
Legend is pretty good.
Yeah. Richard Dean Anderson and...
Briscoe County Jr., essentially.
Basically, yeah. But good show.
And John Delancey is the German scientist who built his gadgets.
That's a fun flick. Show! Dang it! Take a drink. Okay, that is the new rule. Us film critics, when we refer to one of the TV shows as a movie or a film or a flick, take that drink. Not when you're driving.
No.
You're going to tally that up, and then when you park...
Drink all the drinks at once.
Yes, that's the plan.
Well, we gotta take 8 shots now. Glug glug.
No, that's very irresponsible. And we don't recommend it. This is canceled too soon, and this is kind of our 250th episode,
ish, depending on how you count it.
If you count it accurately, no.
If you know us, you know that we have no fanfare when it comes to these kinds of like anniversaries. We just roll on. We keep on keeping on, and we're going to keep on this week with a very long pilot.
It's the same length as most of the other pilots, but it feels long.
No, this is not about. This is like was broadcast. I think as a 2-hour pilot.
Mm. I mean, a lot of the shows that we have done have been sort of movie or TV movie length.
Yeah.
And they didn't get picked up past the pilot, but they made the pilot long enough so that
they could slot it in as a TV movie if they needed to.
So the money could go somewhere. We'd get some material out of this. And sometimes they were even played as feature films in theaters or released overseas. This was an ambitious pilot. Certainly it seems to be an expensive-looking pilot.
Yeah.
For a cop show starring Dennis Franz. Now, I know what you're thinking. Who's Dennis Franz? Okay, you're very young.
Wait a minute.
But the rest
people
of us...
People know Dennis Franz. Dennis Franz won, like, a pile of Emmys. Like, he's a really well-respected actor.
I know. But, it's been a while, and I think maybe some younger listeners might not be as familiar with how huge Dennis Franz was in the 1990s, in particular because of NYPD Blue.
Yeah.
Which was kind of the cop show for most of the 90s.
Yeah, which came after what we're reviewing tonight.
Yeah. But before, Dennis Franz won a million Emmys, I counted, for NYPD Blue.
Mm.
He won no Emmys for starring as a horse cop in NYPD Mounted.
Okay, come on, go. Go, 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 come on. Oh, man, I don't get this. Yesterday he was a horse from hell. Today he's a giant doorstop. What's the matter with you, huh? Come on, go. Look, I think you got to go first, okay?
I don't know the streets.
Well, I didn't know George Bush either, but I voted for him anyway. I think he's got to follow somebody.
Are you sure?
What is this, a quiz? I'm positive. Go.
I'm just thinking about what happened yesterday.
Leave the thinking up to me. It's what I do best. Look, I'll call out the directions like a fighter plane. Pilot up front, navigator in the back.
Tony, how long have you been riding horses, huh?
Okay, so yesterday I was a virgin, and my wife thinks she married this part right here. Come on, let's go, horse. Move it, will you? Come on, let's go already. Hey.
So here's the premise.
By the way, Dennis Franz was nominated for 8 Emmys.
Yeah.
And he won 4. So he has 4 primetime Emmys.
Yeah.
And he has a Golden Globe, and he has a couple SAG awards.
If you adjust for inflation, it's a million.
Four is a lot. I mean,
four is not enough. Four is twice as many as I've won.
It's 4 times as many as you've won, I think.
I think 4 times 0 is still 0, actually. NYPD Mounted. The premise is this. If you've ever been to New York, or if you've watched like a lot of New York movies, there is a division of the New York Police Department where they ride horses.
Yeah, the Mounted Police.
Yeah. And
it
seems...
It's common around the United States. There's not police in most cities.
But New York is kind of considered this, like, ultra-urban environment. It's all concrete and rats. And
mounted on horses, not rats.
Yeah. No, that's a show. But there's a division of the police, and they ride around on horseback. And they even talk about it in the show a little bit, like, why do we have that still? Does that seem like that's something that we still need? And there actually are practical considerations. The biggest... And arguably the most significant is they're there to be seen. They're visible. They are a deterrent. A cop might disappear in a crowd on foot, or a car might drive past you really, really fast. But a guy who's like sitting
walking down the sidewalk on the back of a giant animal. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's an element of pageantry to it, of sort of security theater. But also, horses are great. Horses are maneuverable. Horses can actually ride, can chase people down in the park.
Yeah.
If that was required by law. So we've had a lot of cop shows over the years that have focused on the more obvious sort of aspects of it. Miami Vice, Homicide, Life on the Streets. But every once in a while, they decide to do one about maybe the less popular cops. Do you remember the cop show Pacific Blue?
Which one was
it? It was a show on USA before that was cool, and it was all about cops on the beach.
Oh, yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Because USA, then they eventually had, like, Burn Notice and Mom. Later on, they would have some high-quality programming, but early on, they did not. But they did have a few original shows, and one of them was Pacific Blue, and I remember I only watched, like, one episode all the way through, and it was like, we're hiding cocaine in our surfboards, and I'm like, I don't know how that affects the buoyancy after a while. I feel like that would be the giveaway, but all right. So this is about horse cops.
It's not called Horse Cops. It's called NYPD Mounted.
Horse Cops would have been a better title.
It is almost unbearably cliche. Every single scene is something you've seen from a cop show or a cop movie in the past. This one came out in 1991 when, people, I think, we're finally starting to understand the cliches pretty well, but a lot of the makers of these shows are still comfortable enough to repeat them.
Yeah.
So it's a mismatched buddy cop show. The two mismatched cops, one is played by Dan Gauthier, who plays Wellington. And Wellington is, we see in the opening scene, he's getting a divorce and losing everything. He's like really like wealthy from Montana.
Well, he's not like wealthy, but he's doing fine. He has a house.
Wealthy enough to lose a lot in the divorce.
He has a house. He has a sports car. He has a prize-winning horse because he did rodeo in addition to being a cop. And yeah, his wife takes everything except the horse, which is the most valuable thing. And more valuable than their house, apparently. She even gets the car. And he also a saddle that used to belong to Kit Carson, a famous cowboy. And every time he says, I have a saddle that used to belong to Kit Carson, the recurring gag is, there's a guy who sells that at flea markets all over the place. Right. Those are never real.
That's not authentic.
Yeah, yeah. If we don't recognize the name Dan Gauthier, I don't blame you. But he got around. He was the hunk in Teen Witch. He was the evil hunk in the Pauly Shore movie Son-in-Law.
Oh, I didn't see that one.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He's the guy who wants to marry Carla Gugino, and Carla Gugino like kind of panics and nudges her best friend Pauly Shore. And Pauly Shore says, oh, no, you can't ask her to marry her. I asked her to marry me. And now he has to pretend to be your fiance on Thanksgiving vacation, and this guy gets all freaked out, and he decides to sabotage.
And that's Dan Gauthier.
Yeah. Son-in-Law doesn't sound like a good movie, I'll grant you, but it is probably Pauly Shore's best work.
You know what? I'm not going to dump on Pauly Shore. No, he fulfilled a cultural niche. He was successful at it. He did his thing. I'm not going to impugn him what he did.
I don't have a particular problem with Pauly Shore, but I will argue that if there's one Pauly Shore movie that actually does like hold up. It's Son-in-Law. It's a perfectly good comedy. It works. And his partner, when he goes to New York, turns out to be Dennis Franz, who, in this show, is very Dennis Franzy.
Well, they have him doing the New York shtick, so he's like playing up his Brooklyn accent, and everything he likes about New York is very New York-y kind of stuff. He likes the hot dogs, and he likes the pastrami.
Yeah.
Streetwise, he's a family man. He's got a son and a daughter, and the daughter doesn't respect him because he makes fun of her outfits. You can't leave the house dressed in that kind of stuff.
Yeah. She's wearing her school uniform, and it's like a long dress. And then he asks what she's wearing underneath the uniform, and she's like, Dad, that's creepy. But she's wearing like a mini skirt underneath it, I guess, because after school she'd wear that.
Yeah, you get to school, you take off the uniform skirt, and then you can wear whatever you want.
Then why even have the uniform?
To hoodwink your father.
Oh, okay. Well, anyway, he does that. So that's a whole thing. He's got a wife who he bickers with, but they love each other, so it's fine.
They have a son who's in one scene. He's not really worth mentioning.
Nah, he's got a mouth on him. We'd have done something with him later. We meet Dennis Franz in a moment of chaos because he's in a squad car and he's got the sirens going. He's being called to the scene of a jumper. Someone is hanging off of a fire escape, threatening to jump. But the jumper is Diana Ross. Or rather, a trans woman, or possibly a drag performer. The show is from early 1990s, so
It's implied that she's a trans performer, or that she's a drag performer.
Right.
But they refer to her as her throughout the scene.
Yeah.
So,
I think the terminology wasn't there at the time. I think now they'd probably be clearer about how that character identified. The idea is she's dressed as Diana Ross. She's actually performing as she's hanging off of the fire escape, and people are loving it. And it turns out her motivation for possibly wanting to throw her life away, and this is actually kind of funny, Diana Ross isn't very popular anymore, so she can't do that show. All anyone wants to see is, like...
It's Paula Abdul.
Yeah, but she's too tall to play Paula Abdul. And I have to admit, it's kind of funny.
Yeah, yeah.
That's kind of funny.
Imitating Paula Abdul, that's got to be hard, because Paula Abdul's a professional dancer.
Oh, yeah.
And you would have to learn Paula Abdul's moves, and she has difficult moves.
Well, at the time, Paula Abdul was, like, had just kind of spiked.
Yeah.
You know, she'd had...
Forever Your Girl came out in 88, and...
And this is 3 years later. Yeah. We'd had Opposites Attract.
That's from Forever Your Girl.
Oh, you're thinking
the whole album. Which had, like, 12 singles or something.
Every song was a banger. So... I'm still amazed that we got through, like, the late 80s, early 90s, and DJ Scat Cat never got, like, his
MC
own...
MC Scat Cat.
I'm sorry, MC Scat Cat. He never got his own show, he never had a commercial.
He had a record or two.
MC Scat Cat had his own record?
Yeah, absolutely. I have one.
No. If you don't know what we're talking about, go watch, pause this, go watch the Paula Abdul music video called Opposites Attract, where it's a kind of a duet between her and a guy, and they're very different. I like the quiet, and I like to shout, so they're very different. But when they get together,
they have nothing but fun.
Yeah, it all works out. It's a fun song, but in the music video, her duet is with an animated cat.
Yeah, MC Scat Cat.
MC Scat Cat.
The Adventures of MC Scat Cat and the Stray Mob came out in 1991. I have that on CD.
Wow. I honestly am shocked that I missed that. That is a whole chapter of my childhood
no
that never got
allowed,
written.
No dogs allowed. I ain't no kitty. Cat in the casino. The cat's all spelled with K, by the way.
Well, yeah. I
mean, new
how else would you spell it?
New Cat Swing.
I get it.
Which I don't think is a new Jack Swing song, but, you know, whatever.
I am legitimately disappointed in my childhood. Like, there is no way I shouldn't have known that. I lived in Warehouse. Warehouse, W-H-E-R-E, was a combination video store / CD store. One of the better chains of its ilk. But I lived in that store. I'm amazed I didn't know about that. But anyway, Paula Abdul, she's a big dancer. It was a whole thing. And the scene is kind of funny. Like, he, like, almost falls off the fire escape.
He's afraid of heights. That's
he's afraid
joke,
of heights. Yeah. And so he almost falls off the fire escape. There's a weird cut when he almost falls off the fire escape where I can't tell if Diana Ross is trying to help him or push him or steal his radio.
It's hard to tell. But
kind of, I don't know if they didn't get the coverage. It's really awkward.
All we know is that if you had any illusions that this was going to respect the trans character, Dennis Franz immediately punches her in the face.
Yeah, when all of that, when he's rescued, he punches her in the face. And it's like, oh, God. Yeah. Fuck you, early 90s.
He's on the outs with, like,
he hates his job.
He hates his job because of wild cases like that. He's always in danger, and he asks for a transfer.
He wants to do something kind of easy.
Yeah, so he goes to the chief, who's played by Cliff DeYoung from Shock Treatment.
Well, he's not the chief. He's the chief of the Mounted Police, specifically. Yeah. And so he enlists in the Mounted Police. He doesn't know how to ride a horse. They give him a horse, and the horse doesn't have a name. They just call him the Horse from Hell, which is maybe a little funny. Sure enough, as soon as he, like, gets on the thing, the horse starts going wild, starts running away. And our hero, played by Dan Gauthier, who goes by the name of Lucky... It's a nickname. He's quite lucky. Mm-hmm. That's how he got it.
There's a big chase through New York.
Oh, yeah. Lots of stuff. Jumping over cars.
And they finally calm down. It's the big, long,
He falls into a pond in Central Park. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't understand that Lucky is another cop who was trying to rescue him. They bicker. Oh, my God. These guys are never going to get along. Boy, I hope they don't become partners. That'd be so awkward. Cliff DeYoung makes them partners.
Yeah.
He's the... traditional hard ass, but not particularly bright, like, commander in this kind of thing, where he has the authority to fire them, so they have to be nice to him, but he constantly says things that are kind of dopey. So
making bad jokes, that kind of stuff.
So they're able to make little quick asides that make him angry, but he doesn't quite get it, so he lets it slide.
It's not a good character.
No.
In fact,
it's a hackneyed character.
All of these characters are kind of hackneyed, broad character types.
Yeah.
I'll say this. Cliff DeYoung brought it.
Yeah.
He knows... all of these
actors,
actually...
Cliff DeYoung, by the way, great actor. Great actor. Never got enough credit, I feel, for being a great actor. If you ever saw the movie Shock Treatment...
I mentioned, yeah.
Yeah, it's the sequel to the Rocky Horror Picture Show. He plays both the good guy and the bad guy, and he kills it.
He plays Brad Majors and the villain.
Farley Flavors,
that's
yes.
right.
Great fucking... He has a duet with himself in that movie, and he kills it. It's great.
My only complaint about Shock Treatment is Jessica Harper.
You don't like Jessica Harper in that movie?
No, well, she's fine.
Yeah, her singing voice is phenomenal.
Well, that's what I was going to say. She's no Susan Sarandon. Susan Sarandon was a soprano. Jennifer Harper sang down here. And it wasn't really appropriate for that music. She can sing okay, just not in that movie.
She can sing more than okay. And if... I appreciate that she's not in the same register as Susan Sarandon, and you might find that distracting because Rocky Horror, she plays the same character as Susan Sarandon in Rocky Horror. I can appreciate that. Susan Sarandon is not a great singer.
No, she's not. And okay. she would agree with you.
Jessica Harper is a great singer, okay. So I will happily take that trade.
All right, fine.
In fact, I'm looking for love. I'm looking for trade. That's from that movie.
Yeah,
you get it.
Jessica Harper's not in this.
No,
but Clifty Young is.
Yes, and he knows the role. He knows his job, and he's playing this guy to the nines.
And I feel like Dennis Franz knows the role.
Oh, yeah.
He knows you are sort of chatty New York guy. Make a lot of New York kind of jokes and bring that sort of energy. Almost to the point where it's falling into that unfortunate, like, Paul Feig territory, where he's just going to let the actors chatter for as long as possible, hoping that something funny will eventually be said. And that can be, if it doesn't work, one of the most insufferable forms of comedy.
Yeah.
Where they don't have a joke, they don't have a setup or a payoff, they just let the actors improvise and hope that they come up with something funny. Mm-hmm. And even if they don't, they leave all of the improv in.
Mm-hmm.
They don't cut it out, they don't say, let's take it again, let's find something in the scene.
A lot of it is long shots, like from far away, of Dennis Franz and Dan Gauthier, or their stand-ins, depending on how close the shot is, on the horse, on their horses, just like, you know,
trotting through
New York.
And they shot in New York.
It in New York, and I gotta appreciate this. It looks and feels like New York.
Like, you can recognize certain streets. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of, like, business and busyness around them on the streets. It feels like what it would feel like to walk down a street in New York.
There's a particular way, I don't know how we could bottle this or how we could teach it to somebody, but if you look at just the way the exterior, you know, shots of New York City in films like Crocodile Dundee or the first Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
It's going to say, the Ninja Turtles is weirdly good about, like, establishing New York.
Yeah, it really does. The sequels are more cartoony. The first one is weirdly grounded. But New York just, it feels busy. You can practically smell it. Like, it's just, it really does feel like you're there in a way that even modern movies that are filmed in New York just don't capture anymore. It looks too, the filmmaking is too clean. Here, this feels like they really just stole shots and we're getting real crowds.
Yeah.
And the sound design is a little busy. If you've ever been in New York or a comparably big city, it's never quiet.
It's loud, yeah.
In fact, what was that, it was that Chiron at the beginning of, I think, A Quiet Place. The what's the new one? Quiet Place Day One. Did you see that one yet?
I did.
Yeah, they had that opening where it's like, New York City is constantly at a level of like this decibels, which is roughly the same level as a human scream.
Yeah.
Which is a great horror way to open it, but it's just loud. And they don't forget to make it loud. And I think that sells it. So this is actually a pretty good New York show. We got these long shots of them like walking around, and so they're filling it with dialogue in ADR. Like in post, just look. Bless you. This shot lasts 45 seconds. We need 45 seconds of banter,
and they just kind of like chatter,
and they just kind of riff. It's never nails on chalkboard or anything like that. It's just unnecessary. It feels padded. That's all it is. It's
like
not bad.
Dennis Franz, like, he's clearly improvising. He's building on his character. It's not so obnoxious that I wanted to, you know, slam my head against anything, but I said this while we were watching, because you and I watched a portion of this together.
Yeah.
Every single scene, pretty much without exception, could be cut in half.
Yeah.
Like, they let so much time elapse with this sort of, like, casual conversation with all this establishing of New York.
We're really getting to know the characters, Whitney.
We got to know them already. That's my point.
No, they're stock characters.
We knew. These are stock characters. We don't need all of this extra space to breathe. We're not getting, like, information or jokes.
Yeah.
At best, we're getting kind of a relaxed tone, which is...
I can appreciate it.
Which is, you know, fine, especially when you're dealing with, you know, mainstream television. But at the same time, it's not like... It doesn't feel like we are breathing. It doesn't feel like we are kind of cutting back and forth across New York, where we're introduced to all of these other side characters, where we walk past a bodega and everything's really great, or they get a certain sandwich. There is just a scene when they're first walking around where they get hot dogs. Yeah. And Dennis Franz gets them with mayonnaise, which I guess is something people like in Montana, New Yorkers assume about people in Montana.
He gets a hot dog with everything on it, chili sauce, onions, relish, all that kind of stuff, and he assumes the guy from Montana would just want it with mayonnaise. And that seems like that would be kind of like a vaguely, if not directly insulting joke. And he's like, it's a good thing it got mayonnaise on it. And I'm like, okay, well, we're just going for that, I guess.
Like, I've known some people from Montana. This is the first time I've heard of, like, mayo on a hot dog being specifically Montanan.
I feel like it's just Midwestern white. Did you ever see Undercover Brother?
Oh, yeah.
Because there's a whole thing where Eddie Griffin plays a spy who has to go undercover in a very white business as... it's kind of like Sorry to Bother You. He has to...
kind of put on his... Sorry to Bother, they put on their white voices.
Yeah. So he's got to act as white as possible, and... they give him a sandwich, and he's like, oh, what is this? Like, if you're going to be in this business, you got to like mayonnaise. And so they give him, like, a special gimmick watch that shoots hot sauce so that mayonnaise is edible.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just eggs and lemon. I don't understand.
It's not something I've ever quite understood, sort of, like... dividing spicy food among racial lines is... everybody likes spicy food. I mean, come on.
I don't.
Well, you don't like, but you know you're unusual.
I just have a very mild palate. There's actually a weird joke because Dennis Franz is talking to Lucky Dangote about how New York is better than other places, right? And he says, like, what does LA have? They have surfing and the Reagans. Okay, well, touche. It was 91. But he says New York has the best pastrami. Fact.
Yeah, I will not dispute that.
It's hard to get a good pastrami in L.A., let alone anywhere else in the world. And Dan Gautier says, well, I don't like pastrami. He said, you've had pastrami in Montana. That's basically just corned beef. Like, you haven't even spiced it yet. And Dan Gautier says, well, if they spiced it, I wouldn't like it. I'm like, oh, okay.
Here's the thing. You go to, like, a roadside, like, rest stop on the road from, like, L.A. to Vegas or something.
Sure.
And you're going to find a little sort of gas station that has a row of 500 different kinds of hot sauces. And they all have the most obscene names you could possibly think of.
Yeah.
Like, this one will turn your asshole into a flame.
It's, you know, Satan's urine.
Yeah, stuff like that.
Yeah.
And you see everybody buying that garbage.
Yeah.
It's not good. It's not like good food. You just want the heat off of that stuff. You're not like adding flavor to the food at that point.
No, you're basically daring your tongue to leave you.
Yeah, and there's a lot of these guys just in their trucker caps just pick them up by the armload and put them on their food. So yeah, everybody likes spicy foods. There's extreme spicy foods everywhere.
Anyway, there's a couple more characters that we need to talk about. First one, he's only in one scene. I would hope they would have brought him back had this been picked up. John Leguizamo as a blacksmith. He's responsible for shoeing the horses. Yeah. And he says, like, listen, I was in prison. I had to pick up a trade. And I thought if I picked up blacksmithing, it was a one-way ticket to unemployment checks. Because who needs a blacksmith in New York? Joke's on me. Now I'm in the barn. So he's kind of funny. And then their superior officer, like beneath Cliff DeYoung, but above them.
Yeah, their lieutenant.
Yeah. Is Lieutenant Belana Torres.
Well, they don't say her first name. She's not Belana Torres.
I assume they're related. She's played by Roxanne Dawson.
It's Lieutenant... the character is named Lieutenant Torres.
Yeah, she's played by Roxanne Dawson, who played Lieutenant Belana Torres in Star Trek Voyager. It's a similar character in a lot of ways. And you pointed this out, and I think you're right. It's a better written character.
It's a better written character. Lieutenant Torres from NYPD Mounted, it's like she's kind of impatient, you know, kind of a New York character. She has no patience for Dan Gautier.
She has a job with responsibility, with her a bit, so she, like, you know, she's very businesslike. But she's She's also like a sexual romantic being. She does find him attractive.
Yeah,
there's a tension there.
He flirts with her, but she takes control of the situation. It's like, you don't get to say those things. I'm your superior officer.
And he does not take that hint. By the way, he needs to get written up fast because that's inappropriate.
And I'm thinking of
Lieutenant, supposed to be cute, and it's not.
I'm thinking of Lieutenant Bolana Torres, who's the chief engineer on the USS Voyager on Star Trek Voyager. Mm-hmm. And how that was a very similar character. She was very short-tempered. In the show, she's half Klingon, and that's what they chalk up her temper to. She could just be temperamental.
I figured she was temperamental because she was a revolutionary against the Federation, who now has to work with the Federation. And we're going to move past that.
Half
a season later, we've all moved past that, and no one has any feelings about politics anymore.
But it just sort of highlights how poorly written a lot of the characters on Voyager were, how underwritten they were. The idea of being forced to be the chief engineer on a ship run by people you hate would have been great. It's a great concept, but they didn't do it on the show.
Yeah, and
so as a result, she comes across as like really kind of underwritten.
Yeah, and by the way, Roxanne Dawson, also an accomplished filmmaker.
Yeah. Oh, she became like a really... prolific TV director.
Did a lot of TV. She also directed an Oscar-nominated movie called Breakthrough.
That's right.
Which was about... It's actually a Christian-centric film about a kid, I think he falls, like, through the ice during, like...
Skating or something. And he stays under there for a really long time.
Yeah, and everyone thinks
to get him out, and he survives.
And he survives, and he's miraculously, like, you know, doesn't... You know, he's okay. Mm. Well, how the hell? Well, it was nominated for Best Original Song, granted, but still, have you ever directed an Oscar-nominated movie? No, you haven't. Hmm. Actually, if you have, let us know. That should be useful information. But probably not. Anyway, but she's really, really good in this, actually. So the plot does have to kick in, because this is all set up. And as with a lot of pilots, you know, you're setting up the characters, moving everyone into place. You're establishing the premise.
We're like over 30 minutes into this pilot already. We haven't started the plot. This is like 40
minutes in, by the way. And it's about 90 minutes altogether. So we're setting up the premise. It really could have just been, oh, hey, we're horse cops. We're done. We didn't need all of this.
Yeah.
It could have been pretty straightforward. But whatever. We're building it up. The main plot of the episode, the crime... someone's stolen a tiger.
That's right.
You may recall this is... I feel like this is probably a reference to Mean Streets. Because there's... In Mean Streets, there was the guy who had like a tiger in the back of the bar.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Also, this was 1 year after the release of a really great movie called The Freshman. With Matthew Broderick and Marlon Brando. If you've never seen it, it's wonderful.
They have to transport a Komodo dragon in that movie.
Matthew Broderick is a college student. He moves to New York, and he's immediately fleeced by Bruno Kirby of everything that he owns. And he tracks down Bruno Kirby, and he decides, listen, I already sold it, but I'll get you a job. And he ends up working for Marlon Brando, who is playing the guy The Godfather was based on. So he just gets to do The Godfather again, which is hilarious. Yeah, and his job is to... take care of an endangered animal, which of course runs away, gets lost in a mall. It's a really good movie, actually. Like, it's very cleverly written. And they talk a little bit about, it's the endangered species. Selling them is a big business. So I think they're probably taking a few cues from that. This is where we meet Mickey and Nikki, who are, if I may.
Yes.
The Laurel and Hardy of their time.
They were... Fontaine and Lunt.
They're
just a classic comedy duo.
Yeah, if you've never heard of Mickey and Nikki, good, because they're only in this pilot, and they're not very funny, but they're just really stereotypical Italian wannabe goons. Not even goons yet. They want to be goons.
These are the villains of the piece. Mm-hmm. That, like, it's not revealed later that there's going to be, they're working for some guy, or they're reporting, or they're trying to sell the tiger to somebody. No. These are the guys.
Yeah, they're just not very good goons. They bicker, and they screw everything up, and the tiger gets loose, and our heroes have to track down the tiger, and that's the main plot.
Yeah, the you pointed out that one of, I think it's Nikki, is played by an actor named Spike Alexander, who is in one of our favorite comedies.
Yes, literally a movie I think is one of the best comedies ever made.
It's like...
It's not his fault that it's the funniest plays the straight man. But
yeah, in the early 90s, there was an attempt to sort of reboot the Marx Brothers with new Marx Brothers-like characters played by new actors. Mm-hmm. So we had John Turturro in the Groucho role.
Killing it, by the way.
As Roland T. Fleckfeiser, which is very Groucho Marx kind of a name.
Yeah.
We had stand-up comedian named Bob Nelson, mm-hmm. who he was kind of like the Harpo role. And if you know him, he like juggled... handkerchiefs on stage. Yeah. He had a lot of physical comedy on stage.
Yeah, and then was it Mel Smith?
And Mel Smith, the director of the Radioland Murders and the albino from The Princess Bride.
Yeah, Smith is the Chico.
Yeah, he was like the fast-talking con man guy character.
Yeah.
And they, all three of them nail it.
Oh yeah, like, great.
They have the Marx Brothers persona, and it was a riff on A Night at the Opera, so there's a lot of classical arts. In this case, it was ballet.
Yeah.
And... there were main characters, main romantic characters, who we don't care about.
No, they're there so that young people have someone to look at and go, oh, I could be standing next to John Turturro. But like,
and those to be fair, those kinds of characters were in Marx Brothers movies too. So they just updated that for the '90s. And Spike Alexander played the boring guy.
Yep.
Opposite all the funny characters.
Good dancer though.
Good dancer.
Respectable dancer.
Handsome dude. I'm not taking anything away from him, but
he had
the most unexciting role in Brain Donors.
No, I know. But he is in this. He's trying to like really play up the big New York accent to the point where sometimes he slips into Bobcat Goldthwait, which is really funny.
Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50. In order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today. If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to countrymd.com/energy. And order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GUNDRYMD.com/energy.
So, Our heroes are on horseback. It's their first day properly on the job. Dennis Franz is teaching the new guy, the out-of-towner, the ropes. And they're chasing down a drug dealer into an alleyway. And who's in the alleyway? Not the drug dealer, the tiger. And of course, they're concerned about the tiger. Meanwhile, like on the other way down the alleyway, the drug dealer is shooting at them. So they're caught between a drug dealer and a tiger. But fortunately, there's a bush of berries just right next to them. And they were the sweetest berries they ever tasted.
What's the message? What's the moral of the story?
there's no berries. But no, the drug dealer ends up being like run over by Nikki and Mickey in a van, so that whole thing ends, but they don't catch the tiger. And now there's a tiger loose. And Cliff DeYoung doesn't believe that there's a tiger, but there is a tiger. Yeah, so now Cliff DeYoung believes that there is a tiger. We did not need this scene.
It's a long scene. They explain that there's a tiger.
Yeah, and Cliff DeYoung doesn't believe him, and then he gets a phone call and says, oh, I guess there's a tiger. And we're out. Yeah. Just keep it coming. Keep it coming.
It goes, and unfortunately, this is like where everything like starts to tread water for a big, long portion.
There's a lot of padding in here.
Yeah, so we've established this now.
Yeah.
We know who the characters are.
Yeah.
We know what the case of the week is. We need the story to pick up.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't.
No, they steadfastly refuse, in fact. Yeah. So instead, we take a break. And Lucky tries to get Lieutenant Torres on kind of a date by saying it's for work. And he condescends to her. He calls her doll. And she says, don't do that. But then she, like, hangs up the phone and looks herself in the mirror. And the next time we see her, they're in a diner together and she's dressed up a bit. Fine. And while they're chatting, Lucky's horse, Blaze, is almost arrested. A couple of cops see this horse, and he doesn't have the police horse brand on him yet. So they assume he's a stolen horse, and Blaze has to run away, so he's evading arrest. And he ends up inside a department store doing horse stuff.
Yeah.
Just kind of walking around being a horse.
Horse gets away, goes into a department store. Dan Gauthier gets the call. They bicker over the bill for a little bit, which is a callback, if you recall. Which I don't understand this game. Dennis Franz introduces some kind of like, it's like odds and evens or something. Like they hold up certain fingers.
The idea is
they make some sort of New York reference, and that means somebody has to pay a bill.
Right.
The rules are not clear.
The rules are not clear. After watching it a few times, I realize what you're doing is, I don't know, we'd say like 1, 2, 3 or something, and Whitney would throw out as many fingers as he wanted, one hand or two. So let's say he threw out 7 fingers. But let's say I only threw out 2 fingers. Well, if one of us had guessed 9, they win.
Uh-huh.
And I guess if no one guesses it right, you keep going until someone does.
Yeah,
it's
unclear and it's dumb, and they spend way too much time in this pilot doing this game. And Dan Gauthier tries to play that game with Roxanne Dawson. She's like, no, well, I win. I'm from New York. You're not.
Yeah.
And that's when he gets called away to rescue his horse from the department store,
mm-hmm.
which he does.
He rescues a very outwardly gay person in the women's lingerie section.
Department. And he ends up masking the horse with a brassiere, which
is almost funny.
Could have been clever.
But, he ends up making a few naughty sex jokes with the gay guy, but when he leaves,
the gay guy's expense
a little bit. And at first, it's like, okay, maybe this is a little harmless, but at the end, and when he's like leaving on his horse, and he's like, "Have a good day, ma'am," and I'm like, "Dude, why would you make that, dude? You don't know. Like, what are we doing here?"
In 1991, a scene like this, sadly, this is what passed for progressive at the time.
Yeah.
Just having a queer character talking about their queerness.
Openly queer.
Openly queer character.
Yeah, we've had two.
And they were not victimized until Dennis Franz punched them.
yeah, exactly. And they were portrayed as, in a state of extreme distress.
They were talking very openly about sexuality. Mm-hmm. The main character seemed comfortable with it. Mm-hmm.
And they're like bystanders on the street who actually thought Diana Ross looked very attractive. And they said, show us your legs. And she did. And they were like, oh my God, nice.
So there are like some positive things inserted into the story.
Up against progressiveness.
Like, kind of like glancing in the direction of progressiveness. And then we have to end the scene with, oh, but it's okay. Gay panic.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, fuck, man.
You were so close to almost being kind of okay. We've talked about this a lot. If you look at the documentary Celluloid Closet.
Yeah.
Which is, it's a little dated now because it only went up to when it came out.
Which was 95.
So, like, there's a lot of history it doesn't cover, and there's some other history it kind of glosses over, but pretty good, all things considered. And it's about the history of queer representation in Hollywood.
Yeah.
Which started off pre-code, surprisingly forward, surprisingly progressive, and then the production code threw everyone into the closet, and there had to be a lot of queer coding, and then there was a lot of we can put queer people in movies, but they have to be villains or the victims of violence, or they have to die or something. Yeah. And it was all, very problematic. But Harvey Fierstein had a point, and not everyone agreed with this.
This is still a bit of a controversial point. Yeah,
but his argument was that, at the very least at the time, all representation is good because it's better to have queer characters in the media than not.
Yeah, his philosophy has always been representation no matter what. Doesn't matter if it's bad representation. I don't care if they're villainous or cartoonish in any kind of way. Having a queer character there at all is going to be preferable to just having all straight characters.
Yeah, I'd be curious if
he still feels that way, if
that mentality persisted. I realize it was a different time and representation was still really struggling then. It's not great now, but it's better now.
I've noticed, though, as critics, we still play the game. We still look for the crumbs. We still look for vague mentions of sexuality or queer or trans coding when we don't need to. We can just have queer and trans characters.
Well, we shouldn't have to, and I think some filmmakers are still, and at least some major studios, who have to release their films in markets where homosexuality or queerness of any kind is
illegal
or taboo. And so they don't want to offend those audiences, so they'd rather offend us.
Great, thanks.
Yeah, great. It's
You've done nothing. You've helped nobody.
Yeah, fuck you, basically. Yeah. Where was it going with this? But there is still some of it there, though, and I think there's a lot of it is... I think some of it might be subconscious sometimes as well. Mm-hmm. And also there's a lot of elements of queerness that are not or have not been as much part of the conversation for a long time. I'm on the asexual spectrum, and asexual representation overt in movies and
explicit,
TV.
Explicit.
Yeah. Really uncommon. Mm-hmm. Like there's more now, but it's few. Like BoJack Horseman is half of it. Like, but like you see, you look at like earlier films and you realize that there are characters who are portrayed in a very asexual light. I think even Jeffrey Combs said that Herbert West in the Reanimator movies was asexual.
I've heard that he's asexual, but also that he and the main character were lovers, so there's two interpretations.
I read Jeffrey Combs in an interview saying that was his take on it, for example. Or I would argue that going back to Pauly Shore in Encino Man, He's playing a very asexual character. Yeah. But the point is that you couldn't say that out loud. If you wouldn't know the terminology at that time if you did.
Yeah. Some of the best asexual representation was weirdly from that last Beverly Hills Cop movie.
Yeah.
Where he says, I'm celibate now. I'm not interested in sex anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like,
he doesn't say it as a joke. He's like, no, I'm celibate. And if you look back at the movies, especially the first two, that tracks.
Yeah, he's kind of an asexual character.
He shows no interest in the opposite sex or even the same sex, except, and even when he goes to a strip club, he's doing it to bond with two heterosexual guys, and he's not really getting that into it.
And he's not, like, coming onto the heterosexual guys either.
No. He's just not interested in romance or sexuality, and even in the third film, when he does have a love interest, it's very chaste.
And I've been... I've actually been told this is a bad interpretation, but I'm very fond of the movie I Saw the TV Glow.
Mm.
And the main character was played by...
one of the main characters, Justice Smith.
Justice Smith character.
Yeah.
Somebody asks him outright, are you into boys or are you into girls? And he kind of thinks for a minute and says, I'm into TV shows.
Yeah.
And my ear heard that as asexual representation.
Right, right. It's a little bit more complicated than that. I think that's more fair game than some people think it's credit for. But we're getting into the weeds. He puts a bra on the horse and he leaves. There you go. Meanwhile...
There's a bizarre scene where Dennis Franz tries to drive a car.
And ends up having sex with it.
Like, there's like this close-up of his face, and he's kind of like thrusting his body back and forth.
The car, the engine won't turn.
Come on, baby, come on, while he's turning the engine on.
Yeah, it won't turn over. It won't just, the car just won't turn on. So he's keeping like, so he keeps saying things like, come on, baby, oh yeah, that's the spot, right there, baby, yeah, yeah. And he keeps on going, and he gets like really into it, and then the
car goes on and on. It goes
on for like a minute, and then the car explodes.
Like, in a comedic way. The hood flies off. Yeah. I think there's even a boingy kind of sound effect.
It's not like Lethal Weapon where someone was trying to kill him and his wife comes out and says, what happened? And he says, I don't know, but I think I might be pregnant. So they knew they were doing that joke.
Looks like he's humping the car.
We didn't need that scene.
It's nothing it does goes nowhere.
Lifts out of there completely. Yeah. You'd never know. You would never, like, if you took that scene out, you wouldn't watch this and go, I feel like there's supposed to be a scene where Dennis Franz fucks a car. Doesn't it feel like that was in there and they cut it out?
I feel like, wasn't that one of Joseph Campbell's steps in the hero's journey? We need to include that.
Well, you know what actually might have been, though? Because they were trying to make this into a TV movie, whether it went out or not, that might have been there to get it up to time.
That's true. It could have just been Pat. And it was just the two actors. It was him and the actor.
Yeah, you could have filmed that like later on. You never saw the exterior of the house otherwise. It could have been filmed anywhere at any time. Because that's the thing with editing for TV when you have commercials is you have to fit a certain amount of time. And oftentimes the trick is condensing everything.
Yeah.
You know, you have to cut stuff out to fit time. Sometimes it's too short, but you still need to fill the time.
Yeah.
So you add an extra establishing shot where the car parks or something. Mm. And in this case, it might have been a lot, so they needed a whole scene.
My wife has long held to the theory of... a theory of criticism that a film is going to be... The quality of a film is inversely proportional to how many parking scenes there are.
Yeah.
There's a lot of parking... you're watching crap because they're just padding it out. We don't need to see the car pull down the street and pull up into the driveway.
I read an interview with the executive producers of Game of Thrones who, when they did the first season, they really hadn't done a lot of TV before. Hmm. So they're all kind of new to it. And the reason why that first scene has so much character development for minor characters, the episodes were coming in really short.
Okay.
So they just had to, like, I don't know, let's let these two people talk for a scene. Boom, done.
It turns out you establish a lot more character that way.
Yeah. Anyway, Kristen Davis from Sex and the City gets mugged in the park.
That's the whole scene.
Yeah.
That's another 15 minutes. They're padded out.
But at least it's Kristen Davis before Sex. I like to think she's playing her character from Sex and the City.
In New York. Why not? Yeah.
You know? But she gets mugged. The mugger is running away, and he runs into the tiger. Oh, no. And he gets treed by the tiger. Because tigers don't climb.
This is a real tiger, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
In most shots. A lot of it is stock footage. You can tell.
Yeah.
They cut to the stock footage, and the tiger's, like, not in America.
Yeah, like, we're chasing the tiger through Central Park, and here it is in, like, the savannah, you know?
And because tigers are difficult to train, the tiger is on a leash in certain shots, has a chain around its neck, and they don't bother hiding it at all.
Granted, this was at a time
shots,
when...
In some shots, the tiger doesn't have the leash on.
Yeah.
But then they cut to a close-up, and it does. It has the chain around its neck.
Bear in mind, a lot of these TV at this time, they really weren't thinking that anyone would ever watch this in high quality TV.
No, I'm saying you'd notice that even on like a fuzzy that's like the color's cutting out and the vertical hold isn't entirely stable.
Yeah.
You'd still be able to see that fucking chain.
At this point in the show, I was developing the theory that the tiger was a vigilante because he keeps going after criminals. He never goes after like a random civilian.
Sadly, there's no twist like that. Oh yeah, this tiger used to belong to a cop and it's a cop tiger. No, nothing like that.
Anyway, they've got the tiger in Central Park, and now the cop's like, okay, the tiger's in Central Park, we need to go get it. Cliff DeYoung shows up, and he's going to hunt down the tiger. And but he wants to really hunt. He doesn't want to tranquilize. He wants to really hunt it. He wants to like mount it in his office as a trophy. And Lucky, being a pretty nice guy, says, "No, no, no. You can't. I'll do it because I actually used to hunt mountain lions on my grandfather's ranch." And so they let him get a first crack at it.
Mm.
Turns out that's a lie. His grandfather was a banker. He just didn't want Cliff the Young to do it. But sure enough, Mickey and Nicky... Oh, by the way, Mickey and Nicky have a villain's lair.
That's right. That, like, they have like a Scooby-Doo lair.
Yeah. Like they could have just had an apartment or hung out at a bar or something.
I think it's on Coney Island, isn't it?
Yeah. It's like a spook house. And they've got like, you know, witches and things. Like seriously, the Joker would be at home in their house. It's weirdly, like, overdone. I feel like there might have been, like, a set left over from an episode of Murder, She Wrote. So he said, oh, just leave it up. We'll just say these guys are here and it's added production value
or something. I mean, it adds some visual flair to this slow-moving thing.
So they show up. They're trying to capture the tiger. Our heroes see them. They run after them. And then the last chunk of the show is a pretty lengthy chase as these horses are chasing down a van and then chasing down a tiger. And then Dennis Franz almost gets like thrown off a pier. It's a lot like that stunt in True Lies where Arnold Schwarzenegger, it's
like, he's dangling off the building, like hanging by the horse's reins.
Yeah. And he has to get the horse to back up, which is my understanding they don't like to do.
Yeah.
So that's actually a hard thing to pull off.
And then he berates the horse. What kind of cop are you? You make that jump.
Admittedly, that's one of the better scenes in that movie. That movie has not aged well.
Yeah, I was about to say, we loved it at the time that movie came out. We really loved True Lies.
There's cool action sequences in it. That movie...
It's like sexist and racist.
It's very racist. That movie, I was watching it with my partner, and like everything Tom Arnold says sounds like something that was written by a guy who's currently going through a divorce. Like it's very angry at women.
Which I think... James Cameron was at the time.
I think a huge chunk of his like 80s and 90s he was going through divorces. Like
true, he's been married 5 times.
He was married to Catherine Bigelow, left her for Linda Hamilton, I believe. Was married to Linda Hamilton, left her for Susie Amos.
Yeah.
They're still together, I guess. So I get whatever. I mean, like I'm glad he it worked out. But
he's just living with his family in New Zealand, making those Avatar movies.
But anyway,
there's a big chase. They chase him through Coney Island. They keep on going back and forth where it's like, okay, we caught the bad guys. We're going to go away from Coney Island. Then we're going to go back to Coney Island.
Mm-hmm.
It is a lot of just wheel spinning. There's a scene where they lock the Mickey and Nicky catch the tiger, the one they've been trying to catch.
Yeah.
And they lock it in,
one of those Ferris wheels that are like enclosed. Like you can sit
down. It's like not, they don't put it on the ride, but they lock it in. So it's kind of safe. And then they realize the cops are on their tail. So they let it out again.
Yeah.
It's like, why do we keep going back and forth?
We didn't need that. Just the tiger is still out there. Boom, they're running. What are we even, why?
There's that perfunctory scene where it's like, oh, he nearly caught the tiger. Chief, here's the real story. Okay, now I'm finally giving you the thumbs up to go save the day. And they go save the day.
They capture the bad guys. Lucky lassos the tiger.
That's right.
Which is nice. And then the chief is like, okay, congratulations, new guy. You're one of the team now. Not so sure about Dennis Franz, but Lucky says, I couldn't have done it without him. There's actually a cute line, where Cliff the Young says, I have a hard time believing that's true. And Lucky says, so do I, but it happened, which is a good line. And then there's been a minor recurring bit throughout the episode where Dennis Franz just has trouble with his horse. His horse doesn't want to follow him. He doesn't want to go when he needs to go.
It's not as big a plot point as you'd think.
No,
it's
but
like it's kind of a running gag.
Bit of a running gag, but he keeps asking, hey, listen, can I have a new horse? And at the end, because he did a good job, they say, hey, listen, we'll get you another horse. And he says, well, what happens to my horse? His name is Steve. What happens to Steve? And they say, dog food.
Yeah, we're going to kill him.
Yeah, that's standard procedure when we retire a police horse. And he's so horrified, he says, I want this horse. Which, I like him for that.
That he saves that horse.
Yeah, honestly, here's the thing. And then they ride off into the sunset, bickering in ADR. I like the characters, actually. They ramble too much, but pretty much every character, even if they're broadly drawn or a cliche, with the exception of Mickey and Nicky, who suck, it's a thankless role.
Yeah.
There's no one, very few actors could have made that more than it was. But all of the main characters and all of the side characters who probably would have come back later, like John Leguizamo, they're nicely acted.
Mm-hmm.
They've got they feel more naturalistic in their line delivery than a lot of other shows. of this ilk that are very contrived. A couple of years after NYPD Mounted, there was a show that was actually very successful. It's called Due South. Okay. Remember Due South?
I didn't watch it, but I remember
it. Yeah, Due South was kind of this, but instead of the cop going to New York from Montana, I think it was New York, might have been Chicago, but instead of the cop going to the big American city from Montana, he was a Mountie from Canada who went to an American city as like a transfer, and he had a pet wolf, and he was always wearing his Mountie uniform, which is very pristine. It looks, you know, it's bright red. It looks like very different.
Yeah.
And they played it as he's just a really nice professional guy, and they partner him with like a streetwise, fast talking beat cop, and they're mismatched. And that show worked. Like, I used to watch that show. Like, that show, it actually was like, I mean, it's not complicated, but the reason why it works better than NYPD Mounted is that the fact that this guy is from Montana is not just a quick little aside, but mostly he's just a nice guy. It's the clash of personalities. Here, he's like, he's new to New York, but you get the impression he's going to get it.
Yeah.
Whereas the guy in Due South, he's never going to get it. He's always going to be who he is. And so you have the buddy cop dynamic is more solidified. And here it's big Dennis Franz, small Dan Gaudier. He just doesn't have the material hold his own, you know?
I admire Dan Gaudier for being able to stand up against Dennis Franz.
Sure.
Because Dennis Franz, clearly, he's clearly doing this with ease. Like, he knows how to play this kind of character. He knows how to fill up the room. He knows how to fill up a scene with all of this banter. He knows how to at least try to make the character funny. And Dan Gaudier actually emerges from that as a character who has interests of his own. That's admirable. The actual clash isn't quite there. Like, they talk about a few details, but I don't get the idea that these people are like fundamentally different in their personality. You think of a lot, most cop movies or cop shows, there is some kind of big clash going on. Think of like Riggs and Murtaugh from Lethal Weapon.
Yeah,
like those are very different kinds of personalities, but they end up becoming like a good unit together. They actually solve crimes together. I don't get that kind of vibe. I just get two very talented comedic actors doing what they do well, being handed nothing.
Yeah.
That's the frustrating thing about NYPD Mounted is it's doing all of the technical stuff pretty well.
Yeah.
It's establishing New York really well.
It's got a good atmosphere. It's shot nicely.
We kind of know the premise. We get the premise pretty early on, and there's like a lot of time and space to breathe and kind of live with these characters in New York. What it's missing is some kind of propulsive element.
Right.
Something where we're understand that there's something a little bit urgent or maybe a little bit of antagonistic.
Conflict between the main characters would have really filled that void, I think.
It's almost too affable for its own good. It's really like friendly, it's really easy to watch, and nothing's happening.
I felt like when I was watching it, and again, this is no slight to Dan Gaudier, I think it's the writing more than anything else. I honestly feel like if you took him out and you made Roxanne Dawson, Dennis Franz's partner, or even John Leguizamo. Just switch him out. He's not a blacksmith. He's a young cop.
Okay.
That's a stronger show.
Well, especially
they have stronger personalities.
Especially John Leguizamo is like a lot more of like a New York guy. Yeah. Like, he would have been great.
Yeah, yeah. And he's coming
up. Great and everything. I love John Leguizamo.
He's brilliant. But no, I just feel like it's by trying to get this very milquetoast guy who doesn't even have that stronger personality. He's just kind of a dippy, affable dude. It doesn't ruin it, and maybe they could have fixed this over time, you know, kind of strengthened his character up, tightened up, like, where he was at. That might have worked.
Maybe.
I keep trying to imagine, though, because here's the thing. This is a cop show, and I'm sure, given the emphasis they put on the supporting cast, like Dennis Franz's family, there would have been various subplots about the characters, you know? Like, I don't know, Dan Gaudier's gotta chaperone Dennis Franz's daughter's prom or some bullshit like that. I'm a little hazy on how...
Some bullshit.
Just some bullshit. Like, which is fine, you know, a lot of episodic TV has some bullshit in it. That's why we watch. We don't always watch. There was a gag on John Oliver this week where... I forget even what the context was. I think it was about nuns or something. But they showed a clip from Magnum P.I., you know, old cop show with or he was a private detective, wasn't he? Magnum was private detective.
PI.
Yeah, yeah.
Private investigator.
It could have been his last initials.
His first name was Magnum Philip Irvingson.
Yeah. I don't know.
Magnum PI. No,
it makes sense when you say it. But anyway, he's hanging out and he sees a nun. I don't know, like fixing a window on a ladder or something, and she sort of nods to him, and he nods to her back, very polite. And then all of a sudden, he stops and thinks, "Wait a minute, it's Sunday. Nuns don't work on Sunday." And he pulls out a gun, and she pulls out a gun, and they shoot at each other. And John Oliver made the point, TV used to be better. And he said, not because the shows were better, but because we used to be better. We used to accept that. That was an okay thing to happen in a show. Hmm. You know, it wouldn't be like rolling our eyes and be like, no, we'd be like, no, that's awesome. More of that, please. We used to be, I think, a little bit more forgiving about our TV shows being bullshit. This was on at the same time as Baywatch.
Which, speaking of bullshit.
Yeah. I think like literally a billion people watched Baywatch, and I actually don't think that's an exaggeration.
It
was like the most watched TV show in the world.
I think it was the most watched TV show, on Earth.
Yeah, yeah. The premise is they're lifeguards. That's it.
And they solve stuff.
Sometimes. They don't even do that all the time. Sometimes there's a bikini contest. Sometimes there's a ghost in a cove. There was one episode where a guy was selling bad sandwiches and they had to stop it. It was very thin. But people would just watch it because sometimes weird shit happened. And that was enough. That got you through. Maybe the show is because the show has some of that farcical stuff. Cliff DeYoung is playing a much broader character. I feel like maybe the show needed to be a little weirder.
Some element that was missing. Give the horses like more human characteristics. Something.
Something. I feel like this show would live and die if it went past its pilot. Mm. Your A plots had better be fucking fun, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you cannot just have, like, oh, no, there's a guy in the park, and he's stealing balloons. Gotta catch him.
Mm-hmm.
You really have to just let your imagination soar, and I'm not clever enough to solve this problem. I'm really not. But I will say this. Well, the question is, was it canceled too soon? I'll say no.
No, it wasn't. They had a lot of good elements, but they didn't have enough ideas.
No.
They didn't have a strong enough script. Yeah. They didn't have a premise that felt like they could come back to it every week.
Probably not,
They're not exploring, like, a tone or a story that makes me excited about coming back to these characters.
No, I'm not excited.
I'll say what they did fine.
That's my point.
Yeah.
I think... Well, I don't think this was canceled too soon. I actually did kind of like it. It's got problems, but it's also got a lot of things that it does well. I would recommend that someone watch this. If it's like, hey, should I watch that thing for NYPD Bounty? I'd be like, yeah, you'll have a good time.
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah.
It's fine enough, you know.
I just watched a new movie on Netflix called The Union, which is like a $100 million spy comedy starring Mark Wahlberg and Holly Berry. And I had more fun with NYPD Mounted. Like, genuinely, not ironically. Like, no, this was a more entertaining production. So, I'm glad I watched it. I'm glad, hopefully, maybe some people will know about it and seek it out. Especially if you're a Dennis Franz fan. And maybe, you know, think of it as a weird prequel to NYPD Blue. I maintain that this is in continuity with Voyager. And that's Torres's, like, great-great-great-great-great-grandmother or something.
Could very well be.
Maybe.
I actually don't remember if her...
What side was...
Yeah, if her mother's side or her father's side was the Klingon side.
I don't know.
I don't remember
that. I don't recall either. Well, when we get to Voyager and our Patreon-exclusive Star Trek show, we'll dig into it further.
Yeah.
But yeah, no. I forgot where I was going with this. Yeah, it's okay.
It's okay. It's all right. It's not... I mean, we've seen, like, some pretty horrible crap.
Oh,
and we've
have.
Seen, like, some really slow, boring things that are just... Yeah. You can understand why they weren't brought to series, because they didn't have anything. I feel like they don't have anything to bring to series, but they have a watchable TV movie.
Yeah.
So they have something.
Oh, yeah, they got something.
They just don't have enough to make me want to come back.
Yeah. Well, that is it for Cancel Too Soon. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We think you're neat.
Yes, thank you.
Do you remember? Did you watch this when it was on TV? I sure as hell didn't. I know it aired. It's available. You can actually like rent this properly, like on like on like streaming services. So you know, this wasn't like something that got dug up. This was out there. Let us know. Our email address is letters@criticallyacclaimed.net. Do you know anything about Horse Police that we missed or misunderstood?
Mm.
That would be really useful as well. Again, letters.
First of all, they're called Mounted Police. Just calling them Horse Police.
You know, I was watching this.
Makes it sound like Fish Police.
I was watching the show and everyone kept saying, they say this in every cop show, Freeze! Police!
Yeah.
There needs to be a show called Freeze Police, where it's like, it all takes place in like Antarctica or something. Yeah. You know? Or the Freeze Police.
It's a cop with Iceman powers.
I'd watch that too. anyway, what's our P.O. Box?
Send us a physical letter to the Critically Acclaimed Network, P.O. Box 641565, Los Angeles, California, 90064.
Yeah, and again, our Patreon is patreon.com/criticallyacclaimednetwork. They get all of our shows for free, and hopefully by the time this episode is aired, we will have already released the next episode of Cancel Too Soon, which is about a show that, when it debuted, was the most expensive television series in history.
Yeah.
It's called Super Train.
We're going to be talking about Super Train.
It's about a very big train. That's it. That's the show. There's no more to it than that. It's like, it's basically Love Boat, but it's the Love Train, and it's the world's biggest train.
Blow the world, all join hands.
Anyway, God help us.
Watching Super Train.
It's coming up next. Anyway, we're on social media at Critic Acclaim. I'm at William Bibbiani.
At Winnie Seibel here.
And, yeah. You keep on keeping on, you know, keep on hanging out with your horses.
See you next season. That's how we close this one.
That's a wrap. We'll see you next season.